Hello, everybody, and welcome to Sake Revolution. This is America's first sake podcast, and I am your host, John Puma, from the Sake Notes, and also the admin over at the Internet Sake Discord, as well as lead mod over at Reddit's r/sake community, where we come together to talk about sake.
And I am your host, Timothy Sullivan. I'm a sake samurai, a sake educator, as well as the founder of the Urban Sake website. And every week, John and I will be here tasting and chatting about all things sake and doing our best to make it fun and easy to understand.
Full disclosure, I think my favorite part is the tasting.
You don't like chatting with me anymore?
Oh. I know, I do like chatting. I didn't say I don't like it. I just said my favorite part is the tasting. I'm not going to lie to you. I enjoy chatting and I enjoy tasting. I also enjoy lounging on the couch while I sip. This is something that's well known. I got to say, this is a little weird being back to Zoom. I got a little spoiled last week, Tim.
Yes, we had an in-person session, and not only are we back to Zoom, John, but we are back to another brand profile this week.
Yeah. And I'm kind of really excited about this little run that we're doing.
Yeah.
It gives us a really great excuse to just talk about a brewery or a brand that we're excited about, and I think that's a lot of fun.
Yeah, well, we picked a humdinger this week.
A humdinger.
Yes, this is a really unique brand. Do you want to let the good folks know what we're going to talk about?
Sure. I think unofficially, this is becoming like a young people making awesome sake series. But actually, we're going to be talking about Senkin today.
Yes, this is another redemption story. Another
forging
a new path. You could even say going against the grain, couldn't you?
Yeah. Well, we'll find out later if they changed the entire brewing structure along with it like Kid did. This is a brand that I'm very excited about. It's another one of those brands that when it came out, it got a lot of hype behind it, got a lot of boutique kind of excitement, and then came to the U.S. really fast.
Yeah.
This was another exciting moment when I walked up at a tasting event and saw that they had a booth. And I was like, why does Senkin have a booth at this event? They are coming to the U.S. Yes.
So I'm very excited. And you actually found this brand in a liquor store in Queens, New York. Is that right?
Yes. It's another tale of John's local liquor store that sells excellent sake. They carry a whole array of Senkin products.
That's great. So, John, do you want to get us started and tell us what you know about the background of this brewery?
Well, like you mentioned earlier, another kind of redemption arc here where you have the younger taking over and going in a different direction. Mm. So, yeah, this brewery is a little bit older than Heiwa Brewery was, I think. So 1806 for this one. And they're located in Tochigi, where they are, I think, the oldest brewery there.
Wow.
Yeah. I have people I know who will argue that Tochigi may be the best prefecture for sake.
Really? We got to have them on the show. We got to have
I'm sure he'd be happy to.
We got to have a prefecture smackdown.
Yamagata versus Tochigi.
Who's going to win?
Yes. So he has two brothers, took over the family business, the, at that point, 200 plus year family business, and just redid everything in their own image, I guess. Mm. And they did it all around the concept of acidity.
All right. So two brothers, and I think one is the Kuramoto, or the brewery president, and the other one, the younger brother, is the Toji. Is that right?
Yep, that's exactly right. They're a 1-2 punch.
Very cool.
Yeah. And I think that like acidity and sake has become a really kind of hot topic and a trendy style. Probably, I want to say that Senkin is leading the charge on that, at least to a certain extent. And they do a great job of kind of blending like tart and fruitiness with acidity and like, and giving you that really nice, like juicy punch to the sake. And it's often like the style is kind of often compared to like Riesling. Are you familiar with Rieslings?
Not a whole lot. Definitely not a wine expert. Definitely not a wine expert over here, but
no, I know I like Riesling though. So I, that's, you know, that's what I, what do I know about wine is I know the kinds I like, and I know the kinds I really didn't like that much. And that's about it. Sometimes I know where they're from. That's about it. That's why we're not doing a wine revolution.
Or cider revolution.
No cider revolution. Exactly. Exactly.
Well, can I tell you a little bit about what I learned about the older brother?
Please.
So this is, his name is Kazuki Usui, and he's actually the 11th generation since 1806. So he was set to take over. I read a few articles about his path to becoming the president, and he wasn't too thrilled about working in the sake industry initially when he was younger. He went to college but dropped out to study wine, and he became a very dedicated wine sommelier. And in 2008, the brewery was literally like about to liquidate, go close, and it was like the 11th hour. The place was going to shut down. And he decided to come in with his wine background and develop a new, totally fresh and different style of sake. And his wine background led him to a love of wines from Alsace and Germany, which are these high acid and sweeter white wines that we were just talking about. And he used that as inspiration. And he even calls the brewery now a domain. Have you heard that word in the wine world?
I hear that associated with wine a whole lot. I usually see it with a trailing E, domain. It just makes you want to say it like it's French.
Well, my favorite domain is sakerevolution.com.
Oh, very nice. Good plug. Good plug.
Well, if there's any wine experts out there listening, please correct me if I'm wrong. But I think domain ties into producing the wine and the fruit on the same area of land. And they do that with their rice and water, right?
Yeah. So apparently they, this is really interesting. All of the rice fields that they use for their sake are within 5 minutes of the brewery. That's not 5 miles, Tim. That's 5 minutes. I don't know what mode of transportation we're dealing with for 5 minutes, but I'm going to, you know, give them a little bit of slack if it's 6 minutes away or they had some traffic, they got a stoplight. I don't know. But that's crazy, by the way. At least it seems that way to me.
Yeah, it's super unusual. It's very common for breweries to purchase rice from further away. Sometimes from prefectures away is quite common. Yeah. So that they're committed to growing all the rice immediately around the brewery. It shows how much they have really come to bring those wine industry norms into the world of sake. Really interesting.
Yeah, it is. It is. It is. They do. It's contract farming still, but it's super close by. It's like contract farming on your front lawn, essentially.
That's amazing.
And I think, as I mentioned earlier, they make sake with locally grown omachi, yamada nishiki, and kame no o. So very interesting stuff, and already really unusual in the way they're doing it.
Yeah. So when we get to our tasting, we're going to be looking for high acid and maybe a little bit sweeter overall.
Right. Now, how high are we talking here? What's normal? What's a normal acidity?
Well, I would say the average acidity for sake in general in Japan is probably between 1.0 and 1.5 on the acidity measuring scale. And when we get to the tasting, we can look at where a senkin falls. And for the sake meter value, probably on the low plus side, maybe plus 2, I would guess.
I think that we encounter, yeah, most of the sake that we deal with and have gone with over the show's 60 some odd episodes now have been in that plus two, plus three occasionally if we're being crazy.
So when we get to the tasting, we'll look and see where we fall there. And we're going to look for higher acid and sweeter profile for the sake meter value.
That's exciting. Yeah. I'm not just saying that because the tasting is my favorite part.
So, John, I want to ask you, this is the second brand that we've looked at that has kind of taken a new path. It's gotten a lot of attention in the media. Mm-hmm. And what do you think of that kind of diverging from the worn, known, traditional path and trying something like this?
Well, I think that just like with Heiwa and Kid, it's necessary. I think that sake needs to evolve and change, and it's mavericks, for lack of a better term, like this, going out there and bringing different things to the table, going for broke in this case. You mentioned that they were kind of on the verge and they went and did something risky here. That's what sake needs. It needs people who are going to think outside the box a little bit. They're going to try some interesting things. And if it didn't work, if it wasn't like wildly successful, if it wasn't a great idea, we wouldn't be talking about them right now because the company would be out of business.
Right. Can you imagine put yourself in Kazuki Usui's shoes, 11 generations of ancestors on your shoulders, and you're like, I'm going to gamble on high acid sake? And I even read that his father tasted the first batch. The previous president tasted the first batch and gave him the thumbs down. Like, I don't like this.
I've heard that story. And the best line of it was he told him his acidity meter was broken. And I will never forget that. Hearing that line, I was like, that's
hilarious.
That's a burn. That's like a really good.
We have to give Dad his props, the 10th generation president.
You know, having said that, his son had something there, right?
Yeah.
He made something great. And now I think that not only did it save the company, apparently, but it also changed the course of sake. This is now, like, high acid sake is a thing. Like, it's totally a legitimate subgenre of sake right now.
And I think, for me, it really boils down to diversity. A few breweries making high acid wine like sakes is not going to take anything away from the other breweries that make super dry, super light, super fruity, classic Ginjo. This is something new and it brings diversity to the plate. Sure. And I think that's a good thing. You can still enjoy all those traditional styles, but a few breweries coming out with something new, different, innovative, I think is really fantastic. And the question we had with the Heiwa Shuzo episode also is, when does it not become sake anymore? Like, you know, what are you in the bounds or out of the bounds? And what are the laws in Japan? And perhaps we'll see some changes or adjustments to the laws to allow for even more innovation of this nature. I think that would be a good thing.
Mm-hmm. I think so too.
Yeah.
Even if they want to label it in a different way or something like that, it's fine. I think that's, again, making sake a broader category is in everybody's best interest, especially sake drinkers or people who are potential sake drinkers.
This type of innovation is also really good for sake beginners. If you try sake for the first time and you get your hands on one of these higher acid Senkin sakes, you may love it, you may hate it, but you're not going to come in with any preconceived notions about what sake has to be. Mm-hmm. And so many old-time, old-schoolers have their favorites and the types that they like and what they think sake is. So it's a great way for beginners, people just starting out with sake, to get in and try something new. I think that's great.
You're telling me that this is not going to be embraced by the Oyaji community. Is that what you're telling me? I finally did it. I finally broke him.
Yes.
Ha ha.
The Oyaji old man community is not going to get behind this.
I mean, maybe they should give it a shot. That's all I'm saying. They might enjoy this. It's really funny. Good.
It's funny.
But There is a nod towards tradition in the sake that Senkin is making, though, because all of it is still Genshu. All of it is still Muroka. So these, you know, kind of older ideas, and they're just bringing some new things to the table to play with those ideas. I think that's fun. I think that's interesting.
They're definitely respecting the methods for sure. Mm-hmm. Everything I've read about them, they are super dedicated to traditional production methods. So they're not abandoning sake production to make everything like wine. They're using the influence of the wine industry, I think, to just affect the flavor and how can they work those sake production steps.
And, I forgot to ask earlier, Tim.
Yeah.
Have you been to Senkin Brewery in Tochigi?
Gosh. Well, the answer, again, would be no. Yes, I have not visited Tochigi and I have not visited Senkin Shuzo, or as they call it, domain Senkin.com.
Is that your favorite domain now?
I'll tell you after the tasting.
I like it. I like it. Well, on that note, I think we should probably get on to the tasting.
Yes. John, would you like to introduce the stats for the sake we are both tasting? We're tasting the same today.
I would absolutely love to, Tim. Today, we are drinking the Senkin Immortal Wing. By the way, that name's amazing. I love that name. It's a pretty good name. Immortal Wing. Classic Kami no O Junmai Daiginjo. Now, everything that Senkin does is Junmai Daiginjo. This is one of their production standards. It's like everything's a Junmai Daiginjo, everything's a Muroka, everything is a Genshu. Mm-hmm. The rice type is called Kame no O. And Tim, this sake rice is super interesting and deserves an episode all about itself. And we'll get to that at some other point. I don't want to go too deep in the weeds on this. But rice polishing rate on the Kojimai is 40%. And on the kakemai, the starch component, you're looking at 50%. So just like the kid, they're doing a variance on the polishing rate for the two components, which is interesting. The yeast is kind of vague, just Tochigi yeast, according to our chart here. And that sake meter value that you mentioned was going to be a little bit sweet is, in fact, a little bit sweet at -2.
-2.
-2. Okay. We rarely go negative here with our sake meter value, so that's interesting. And here we go. The acidity, drum roll please, is an alarming 2.2.
Wow. Okay, that's higher than average for sure.
That's really high. Alcohol is 15%, so that's actually, you know, right at the bottom of normal, I want to say. And this bottle was only introduced in 2017.
All right.
So really, you know, recent style, recent brand, really nice stuff.
So, John, I notice it says it's classic Kame no O. What's up with the classic?
So Senkin's Immortal Wing line comes in modern and classic varieties for each of the different rice types. So this is the classic Kame no O. There is also a modern Kame no O.
Oh, so it's the same rice type, but they may kind of style it two different ways?
Style it two different ways. It's the same yeast. Uh-huh. It is the same polishing rate. It is just a matter of the brewing method.
Wow.
Yeah.
So we're going to be trying something from their classic line.
Right.
All right.
And yeah, the classic line is supposed to be a little bit more... a little more umami action going on, which makes sense, right? A little more umami makes sense. When you're saying classic, that makes me think a little bit more classic. And the modern is a little bit more of that, a little bit even more of that tartness and acidity.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm super interested to try this. Another thing the label tells me on the front is that the rice is grown locally from pure spring water. That's must be the brewing water that we talked about. And harvested by hand. Unfiltered and matured in bottle. So that means no charcoal filtering and aged in bottle. Fabulous. Yep. Well,
yeah.
Should we get it open?
I think that's a great idea. Now, since this is Asian bottle, I'm not going to be too surprised if we hear a little something-something when we open this. Yep. There it is. So, Tim, how clear you want to say this is?
There's a mist.
Very, very lightly.
There's a mist, right?
Very tiny bit. Yes. And it's slightly, very, very slightly yellowed.
I couldn't even call it a haze, really. But there's,
No. It's in fact, cast, it's, as it sits in my glass, it's actually getting a lot clearer. I think maybe that some of that mist is kind of going to the surface. Ooh, that nose is nice, though. Mm.
It's rich.
Mm-hmm. Kind of promises acidity, almost.
And it smells fruity.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. Now, would you, I know you and I are not wine experts by any stretch, but would you describe this as a wine-like aroma?
A little bit. I actually had a Riesling last weekend, so it's like fresh on my mind. But the Riesling I had smelled much more tart than this.
Mm. But this is kind of a step in that direction, don't you think?
Oh, yeah.
Mm. Very lovely aroma. It's soft. It's fruity.
Mm-hmm. It's very, very, very nice. This is going to be the weirdest aroma description I think I've ever given, but it's kind of soothing to me. Very nice.
Mm. All right. Well, let's give it a taste.
Hmm.
Sinkin Classic Kame no Ojun Mai Daiginjo. Well,
how do you like that acidity?
I like it. It's not as off the charts as I was thinking it would be in my mind. Like I was preparing myself. I also had a German sparkling wine recently from the Pfalz region, which is this area of Germany that produces this the style they were talking about. Mm-hmm. And that had insane amounts of acidity compared to this. So I can see this being inspired by that, mm-hmm. but we're not getting to those true German Riesling acidity levels.
No. It's still a sake. Exactly right. It still tastes very much like sake. It tastes like really, really good sake, actually. It's really well balanced. I think the sweetness is somehow tricking me into thinking it's not as acidic as it is.
Mm. Yeah. You know, we can pick up best on acidity on the sides of our tongue. Like if you ever bite into a lemon wedge and you feel the prickliness on the sides of your tongue, that's where a lot of the acidity receptors are. And if you let this kind of sit on your palate and linger, you can feel that. The hint of acidity that's there. Mm-hmm. Really nice.
Yeah. There's a really, really nice mouthfeel on this as well.
Mm.
It's got a little bit of that, you know, aged in bottle suggestion of effervescence. Like it's not bubbling, but when it's on your tongue, you're kind of feeling that like it's got a little bit of action still.
Yeah.
And that's really nice. It's got a nice dance to it, I guess.
Usually the super crisp, drier sakes tend to disappear off your palate immediately. Mm. And this kind of coats the palate a little more, and it feels a little bit broader on the palate and just a thicker texture as well.
Yeah.
That comes from the aging you're mentioning. It sticks around.
It definitely sticks around. It lingers a bit.
Yep. But, you know, for all the high acidity and the more residual sugar, the alcohol is still only 15%.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like they're bringing in some super high alcohol content here to kind of knock you over. They're really letting the acidity and the sugar come out, I think, by keeping that alcohol low.
Probably. I think that if it was higher, it would be a little bit of, it would be out of balance. And this is really nicely balanced. Mm. This makes me think of, and I know I mentioned this in the past, it was probably the other time I had one of their sakes on the show, but circus peanuts, those orangish marshmallow candies.
Yes. Something tells me that those are not preservative-free and vegan-friendly.
I'm going to say that. In fact, I would guarantee they're not. Not that I'm in a position to make that guarantee, but it's a safe bet. How's that?
But I know exactly what you mean. I ate them as a kid, and I think that anyone who's not American is probably going to have to Google it.
It's not like they're great or anything. You're not missing out if you're not an American who didn't have these, but it's just something very distinctive.
Yes.
And I'm getting that out of this on the, kind of mostly on the finish, especially if I let it linger on the tongue.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. Circus peanuts, guys.
Well, I think that speaks to the little bit of the sugariness, the concentration of the residual sugar, that candied, little bit of a candied note to it. And that comes through in those German and Alsace wines as well. You get that kind of rich coating sweetness and high acidity to balance that out. It's so interesting to see how they're bringing these concepts into the world of sake, but still keeping it sake. Like, this is not so off the charts crazy that you're like, what is this? Yeah. But it's a fine line that I think you have to walk to stay in the world of sake, but really bring something new and super different.
Yeah. Like, for the record, everybody, this would not be, I imagine, in the opinion of my wife, this would not be crazy style. It is quite sane. It is just a little bit high in acidity. But I think, you know, for me, the balancing act and like the exciting thing about this sake is that it is so high in acidity, but balanced so well that it's not overwhelming you with how acidic it is. And that's a testament to the craftsmanship, I think. I think that whenever we have something that has one of these weird stats on it and we look at it, we're like, wow, this is going to be so bonkers. And we taste it and we're like, no, this actually makes perfect sense. Like, that's a testament to how well these guys are making this sake.
Yeah. So one thought that just occurred to me, like, if you're a beginner getting into sake, you know, we love to get new people into sake and make it easy for people to understand and get into it. When these new niche styles come out, do you think it makes learning about sake more confusing for people or hard to navigate as a beginner?
I mean, it probably does make it a little bit more complicated, but imagine you're a fan of this kind of wine and somebody's like, oh, there's this sake you should try. And you're like, well, I don't know about sake, blah, blah, blah. I've had it before and it tastes like rice and blah, blah, blah. But then you taste this and you're like, wait a minute, this is a sake for me.
Yes.
And, you know, this is a great entryway for people who like those types of wine to experience sake that's right up their alley.
That's such a great point. It can act as a bridge. And, you know, the wine world is super confusing. People don't talk about that as much as they should. The wine world is super confusing. And if you want to find your way, you have to study a little bit, talk to your friends who know what they're doing. And I think the sake world's becoming that even more now. There's all these different varieties. One of the biggest misconceptions, I think, about sake is that it's just one thing. People have sake once and they write it off. I didn't like it. I'm never having that again. But we're getting to the diversity and the nuance that there is. I think there's a sake for every person out there.
I want there to be. For certain. That would be a great thing to have a sake out there for literally every type of beverage fan.
Yeah. We'll see that happen.
For you, I recall from our episode about your aha moments and your kind of getting into sake. Was there anything that bridged for you, or was it just like a completely unique experience?
For me, there was no bridge in sight. It was the shock of the new. It was like a shock to my system. Yeah. And it didn't compute in my brain. That's what shocked me into loving sake. It's like, this is fantastic, and I don't know what I'm tasting. I don't know how I got here, what's going on, and I have to learn more about this. So for me, it was not at all that gentle easing into sake. It was like jumping into the deep end and getting shocked by it. And, you know, I luckily had a sake that was delicious and it shocked me in a good way. But I can see people having their first experience and getting shocked in a bad way if it's something they don't like. And yeah. Then that may not be so good. So, yeah. But for me, it was just like, does not compute, must learn more.
Nice, nice. Based on our experience here today, does Tochigi go on the bucket list?
I say, hell yeah.
And a visit to Senkin. Is that something that that you want to make happen now?
Absolutely. We're inviting ourselves everywhere.
Yeah, we're good like that.
Yeah, no, I would love to visit Senkin and talk to the brothers Usui.
Yes. Yeah, I got to start dropping that I really love brewery t-shirts also. Hopefully if we'll get invites and t-shirts. That's my
You're
goal.
Incorrigible.
I know, I'm awful. But nonetheless.
Yeah.
I really like what these guys are doing. I really like what this is all about. And the sake is wonderful, even though not the biggest wine drinker in the world. But hey, this is really good stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, we're both tasting their classic style. So some point in the future, we have to revisit with their modern style and see what that's all about.
Absolutely. And we should do a little compare and contrast. I think that would be a lot of fun.
Yeah.
A sip of each one, like same rice, same milling, same yeast. And then we just play around with the different styles and see what we think about each one. That'll be an in-person episode.
Yeah. Classic versus modern.
Yeah. That sounds like a lot of fun.
Yeah. But I think this episode was a good introduction. We got the whole background story, the origin story for the brothers Usui.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's another one of those feel good stories about, you know, people coming in with new ideas and changing the course of these breweries for the better and making some great stuff. Not that long ago, we interviewed Miho Fujita, who had a very similar story. Mm-hmm. You know, where her father came into the brewery and it was in a bad place. And then she came and started working there and was like, oh my God, what have I done? And, and now, you know, now they're making great sake that people all over the world love.
Yeah.
And it's a completely different style than this and a completely different style from Kid, which is another complete, they're expanding sake. They're making it broader.
Yeah. It goes to show you there's not one answer to the problem of how to revive the sake industry. It's every individual has their own answer, and the people that take action are really making it happen. So my hat goes off to these brewers that are reviving their family breweries and their local breweries and making it happen. It's just really what we need more of, I think, for sure.
I agree. They all have their own answers, and the best part, they're all right. Yes. There's more than one answer. That's the best thing about this.
Yep. Y'all, John, this is great. Great tasting with you again. And I want to thank all of our listeners as well for tuning in. We really do hope that you're enjoying our show. If you'd like to show your support for Sake Revolution, the best way you can help us out would be to back us on Patreon. That's right. John and I have started a Patreon. So we have two levels of support. The first one is $5 a month. And for that, you can join us live and on Zoom for our monthly Sake Revolution Sake Happy Hour. This happens the first Wednesday of every month.
Mm-hmm. And we're there chit-chatting, we're answering questions, and we're sipping the what's left of the bottles that we had the month prior. And it's a whole lot of fun. Usually people have really great questions, a lot of behind the scenes stories, a lot of how the sausage gets made. I want to say it's been great to kind of interact with the people who help make this show possible.
And our $3 level gets you the inside intel, and we'll post on Patreon 2 weeks in advance, letting you know which sakes we're going to be tasting if you want to purchase them in advance and drink along with us when you listen to the episode.
That's right. But there are other ways to support our show. You can also get on your podcast platform of choice and give us a review. Reviews on places like Apple Podcasts really still make a huge difference. And it really, really, really does help us. And while you're at it, getting people interested in our show, make sure you tell a friend. and tell your family and your family friends and family dog. and also get them all to subscribe. This way you don't miss any episodes at all.
And as always, to learn more about any of the topics or sakes we talked about in today's episode, be sure to visit our website, my favorite domain, sakerevolution.com, for all the detailed show notes.
And if you have a sake question that you need answered, we want to hear from you. If you want to know why Tim's favorite domain isn't urbansake.com. please reach out to us. The email address, as always, is feedback@sakerevolution.com. Until next time, please remember to keep drinking sake like you're ever going to forget. And kanpai! I got you laughing. This was great.
You got me this week. You got me.